Around the World in 80 Days by Jules Verne. Chapter 32, in which Phileas Fogg engages in a direct struggle with the bad fortune. The China, in leaving, seemed to have carried off Phileas Fogg's last hope, and none of the other steamers were able to serve his projects. The Perrier of the French Transatlantic Company, whose admirable steamers are equal to in any speed and comfort, did not leave until the 14th. The Hamburg boats did not go directly to Liverpool or London, but to Havre, and the additional trip from Havre to Southampton would render Phileas Fogg's last efforts of no avail. The Inman steamer did not impart until the next day, and could not cross Atlantic in time to save the wager. Mr. Fogg learned all this in consulting his Bradshaw, which gave him the daily movements of the transatlantic steamers. Passepartout was crushed. It overwhelmed him to lose the boat by 3/4 of an hour. It was his fault, for, instead of helping his master, he had not ceased putting obstacles in his path. And when he recalled all the incidents of the tour, when he counted up the sums expended in pure loss, and on his own account, when he thought that the immense stake, added to the heavy charges of this useless journey, would completely ruin Mr. Fogg, he overwhelmed himself with bitter self-accusations. Mr. Fogg, however, did not reproach him, and, on leaving the Cunard Pier, only said, "We will consult about what is best tomorrow. Come." The party crossed the Hudson in the Jersey City ferry-boat, and drove in a carriage to the St. Nicholas Hotel, on Broadway. Rooms were engaged, and the night passed briefly to Phileas Fogg, who slept profoundly, but very long to Ada and the others, whose agitation did not permit them to rest. The next day was the 12th of December. From 7 in the morning to the 12th of 8:45 before evening of the 21st were 9 days, 13 hours, and 45 minutes. If Phileas Fogg had left in the China, one of the fastest steamers on the Atlantic, he would have reached Liverpool and then London within the period agreed upon. Mr. Fogg left the hotel alone. After giving Passepartout instructions to wait his return and inform Ada to be ready at an instant's notice, he proceeded to the banks of the Hudson and looked out amongst the vessels moored or anchored in the river for any that were about to depart. Several had departure signals and were preparing to put to sea at morning tide. For this immense and admirable port, there is not one day that 100 vessels do not set out for every quarter of the globe, but they were mostly sailing vessels, of which, of course, Phileas Fogg could make no use. He seemed to about to give up hope when he espied, anchored at the battery, a cable's length off at most, a trading vessel with a screw, well-shaped, whose funnel, puffing a cloud of smoke, indicated she was getting ready for departure. Phileas Fogg hailed the boat, got into it, and soon found himself on board the Henrietta, iron-hulled, wood-built from above. He ascended to the deck, and asked for the captain, who forthwith presented himself. He was a man of 50, a sort of sea-wolf, with big eyes, a complexion of oxidized copper, red hair, and a thick neck, and a growling voice. "The captain," asked Mr. Fogg. "I am the captain. I am Phileas Fogg of London, and I am Andrew Speedy of Cardiff. You are going to put out to sea? In an hour. You are bound for Bordeaux. And your cargo? No freight, going in ballast. Have you any passengers? No passengers. Never have passengers. Too much in the way. Is your vessel a swift one? Between 11 and 12 knots, the Henrietta. Well known. Will you carry me and 3 other persons to Liverpool? To Liverpool? Why not to China? I said Liverpool. No. No. I am setting out for Bordeaux, and I shall go to Bordeaux. Money is no object? None. The captain spoke in a tone which did not admit of a reply. But the owners of the Henrietta, resumed Phileas Fogg. The owners are myself, replied the captain. The vessel belongs to me. I will freight it for you. No. I will buy it off you. No. Phileas Fogg did not betray the least disappointment, but the situation was a grave one. It was not at New York as at Hong Kong, nor with the captain of the Henrietta as well with the captain of the Tankadere. Up to this time money had smoothed away every obstacle. Now money failed. Still, some means must be found to cross the Atlantic on a boat, unless by balloon, which would have been venturesome, besides not being capable of being put into practice. It seemed that Phileas Fogg had an idea, for he said to the captain, "Will you carry me to Bordeaux? Not if you paid me $200. I offer you 2,000. A piece? A piece. And there are 4 of you? 4. Captain Speedy began to scratch his head. There were $8,000 to gain without changing his route, for which it was well worth conquering the repugnance he had for all kinds of passengers. Besides, passengers at $2,000 are no longer passengers, but valuable merchandise. I'd start at 9 o'clock, said Captain Seedy simply. Are you and your party ready? We shall be on board at 9 o'clock, replied no less simply Mr. Fogg. It was 8:30. To disembark from the Henrietta, jump into a hack, hurry to the St. Nicholas, and return with Ada Passepartout, and even the inseparable Fix was the work of a brief time, and was performed by Mr. Fogg with the coolness which never abandoned him. They were on board when the Henrietta made ready to weigh anchor. When Passepartout heard what this last voyage was going to cost, he uttered a prolonged "Oh," which extended throughout his vocal gamut. As for Fix, he said to himself that the Bank of England would certainly not come out of this affair well indemnified. When they reached England, even if Mr. Fogg did not throw some handfuls of bank bills into the sea, more than £7,000 would have been spent. End of chapter 32. Read by David Russell for Lit2Go. Available on the web at fcit.usf.edu.